with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
I'm Jenny Green. It's Monday the 23rd of November and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Paddy Christie and Shawnee Johnson join us as the Tip and Cavan footballers let historic successes sink in.
Lofted in again. Patton goes up and he does well. But the back of the ball is in the back of the net. Finished to the net. Wonderful goal for Cavan as that ball broke in there and finished to the net.
Liam Lennon from the Munster Council gives Conor Sweeney the signal to raise the Munster trophy above his head. We haven't seen a Tip man do this since 1935.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Stephen Kelly is with us as Jurgen Klopp, as he say, on TV deals and early kickoffs.
If somebody tells me again about contracts, then I go really nuts. Because the contracts are made not for a COVID season. We all have to adapt. So everything changed. But the contract with the broadcast is still, nope, we said we have this, so we keep this. What? Everything changed.
I love an angry Klopp in rugby. Stephen Ferris on Where to Next for Ireland as Johnny May makes us pay.
Johnny May chasing up the pitch after this one. There's an opportunity here as Johnny May hacks this one forward here, goes to gather this one and touches it down. That is a sensational try, as they'd say in basketball terms, from coast to coast. From an Irish point of view, that's a disaster of a try with 21 minutes gone.
Not sure Michael Cochran enjoyed it too much. And if you're from Galway or Waterford, it's all about hurling. Shane McGrath will dissect the semi-final lineups.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Donners, it was a great piece of magic from Johnny May, but it was gifted to him.
Yeah, it was. It was straight into it, like. It was. You're 100% right. And look, this is probably the area we talk about, the step off at international levels. But all that happened there, Ruby, was two mistakes. Overthrow a line out and miss a tattle. And as Michael Corcoran says, they go coast to coast. And that's what happens in international rugby. And it's brilliant to say, oh, there's brilliant players at provincial level. And there is, but I think when it comes to it, we need to realise that the international scene is way higher. The calibre of players, they underperform week in and week out with your club. I did it myself. You can miss a tattle on your inside shoulder and someone will cover for you. Come international level, it isn't happening. But it was a disappointing weekend, guys. I'm struggling for a highlight as a Cork man.
Go on, make one up there, something. Yeah. I know Cork got beaten, Ireland got beaten. Surely something happened. One of the kids did something, or something had to happen.
Hey, wait, I've loads of highlights, lads. I can take it away if you want.
No, Claire, we're not going near you. Claire got beaten. You're sitting there, the big puss on you. We're not coming to you at all.
Do you know what? I'll tee it up for you, Crowbar. For me, it really was Tip and Cavan. And it wasn't, obviously, the football, and we're going to go into it in greater detail, but it was the emotion of it. And I think we spoke on Friday about politics and its place in sport and how history matters in sport. Politics have no place, but history do. And just seeing the emotion from Tip and Cavan on winning was just incredible. And for me, you could take nothing away from them. Look, honestly, my phone has been hopping with every Tip person I know who's now an expert in football, you know. But I think that was the highlight, the raw emotion of it all. And I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I think it actually probably started on Saturday night with the beautiful tribute to the victims of Bloody Sunday in Croke Park. The whole spectacle before that Meath Dublin match was absolutely perfect. It was like a dark night. It was emotional. It was calm. The words of Brendan Gleeson around the night sky, just hearing about the victims, seeing them, and we all knew about them because Mike Foley was on and he had told us all about them and we were able to remember them. And I think I was just so glad that we'd had him on and he got to tell us all about them. It was just such a beautiful night, and I thought that Croke Park absolutely nailed it, getting the emotion perfect. Okay, the Meath Dublin match wasn't great, so we can move on to Sunday then. Just absolutely fantastic, as you said, Donica. Just there were yesterday, I think, was a Gaelic football, a day of Gaelic football that people are never going to forget. It was one of the most enjoyable days I've definitely had watching Gaelic football. Tipperary making history, winning the Munster title for the first time in 85 years. Cavan doing the absolutely unthinkable, really beating Donegal, the team that we were all expecting to take on Dublin. And that joy that you mentioned afterwards, seeing Conor Sweeney lifting that cup, the green and white jerseys, then watching Mickey Graham, the cabin manager, breaking down, not being able to be interviewed in the BBC afterwards, and Thomas Gallagher the same. They were just absolutely magical moments, and then just the outpouring of joy from people on social media and around the country as well. You said your phone was hopping, Dunnock. I think everybody's phones were hopping around the country yesterday, just talking about it. Like, people that would have no interest in Tipperary football or Cavan football, everybody was just caught up in it and captured the whole beauty of the day yesterday. And even then, I think it was just topped off. The provincial champions of 2020, Dublin, Tip, Mayo and Cavan, are the same as the provincial champions from 1920, 100 years ago. I think that's just absolutely amazing. And to be honest, after the whole weekend, it just made me so proud to be a member of the GAA community, because it was just special.
Yeah, but Kildare didn't win the Christie Ring 100 years ago. They won it this year.
There you go, take it and run.
imagine if Kildare was a hurling county, what we'd have to listen to from Ruby.
But then that's all the more amazing. Like, there they are, tier whatever they are in the hurling. They won the Christie Ring and they barely get a mention. The
only thing actually,
that of course it was Kildare winning something. Can Kildare win anything? It's highlight. Trust me, if you're GA in Kildare and you win something, you've got to boast about it. But that was the only thing. I wouldn't say disappointing me, but how quickly everyone looked over what Dublin did.
Do you think
10 Leinster titles, the way they just dismiss Meath, how brilliant they are, and it gets looked over because apparently they're ruining Leinster football. I think they're incredible.
I don't think that's why I got looked over. Like, there was a brilliant article today by Malachy Clerkin, and he said there's nothing better than someone ending a famine to just focus the mind, and Tipperary doing that, it was kind of like when Clare won their first All-Ireland in 1995. It just captures the whole country because it's something so rare, and what's rare is wonderful. And then I think with that for Tipperary, and then with Cavan, because nobody expected it, was such a big shock. And look, it was the day after as well, but like the Dublin win, it did get the tiny little columns, but it was just the storylines on Sunday. I just don't think you can beat them. No matter, I think they would have won 20 Leinsters, those two storylines would have captured more imagination.
And I think it's just even the emotion of the players themselves. You look at Conor Sweeney going up to collect the cup, Cavan's captain Raymond, and then Stephen Cluxon. It was nearly like he just walked up to collect it. He's so used to doing it. And I'm with you, Ruby, that's the goal. That's what you want to get, that you win and you become used to it. But the joy of the two lads, like, you should have seen their eyes, man. It was just
I did see them, and it was incredible. And I get exactly what you're talking about with the emotion, but it's just so Irish. We love the underdog. And then when the champions are winning, just look over them. They're ruining everything. But they're just so brilliant.
Same thing week in, week out, year in, year out. It's hard to get blown away when they never drop their standards. They do the same thing all the time. It is absolutely phenomenal football on a consistent basis. So you just get used to it.
That's what to be marvelled at, I think. When you
see
something so good.
Well, we do marvel at it. Like, every year they win the All-Ireland, like the last five.
It was a Sunday game last night. It barely got 3 minutes. Dublin, boom, bang.
Yeah, but it's a Leinster title.
You're turning blue up there.
I'm not turning blue. I am live on the border of it, so I should be completely anti-blue. But I just think they're incredible.
100%. But do you worry then for Kildare and the rest of the counties within Leinster, because they are miles ahead? You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. No, I don't. I think that they set a standard right next door to you that you have to go and try and get up to. You're going to, they're just up the road. You have to, they set a standard for the country that everyone has to try and get up with. And there's no, I'm reading the papers this morning and listening to different people talking about two-tier championships and the Leinster Championship and what's right and what's wrong. When you have a team like Dublin, they're a once in a life, there might be two generations of them, but they're once, it's a team of a lifetime. And to change everything because of one incredible team, I just think is so knee-jerk.
Well, I do agree with you, Ruby. Like, they're absolutely fantastic. They're a generation of footballers who we will never see the likes of again. And you're right, like, it is important to appreciate them. And most of the time we do, but it's just on Sunday, these two stories were so rare that that's why they didn't get all the column inches that they should get. And you know, they are entitled to it because they're absolutely fantastic. And I agree with you on most of it, and I do worry about football. And I think it's only when you hear players coming out as well, and like John Kinnellan, the Westmeath footballer, came out and wrote an open letter today, and in it, you know, he put in a lot of the cold facts that between 2007 and 2017 Dublin received over 20 times the amount of funding that that they got, and that they'd buy their own shorts before the Leinster final, and just the sponsorship deals. And look, I think they probably do need to look at it now and look at, okay, Dublin weren't the power that they were before, and they did get a huge amount of funding, and they've done absolutely fantastic with that money. Like, the way that they have spent the money, the way they have developed coaches, the way that they have developed players, they're the blueprint. But now the other the other teams in Leinster need the opportunity. They need the expertise. They need the learning. They need whatever was done for the Blue Wave to try and catch up to them. I don't think Dublin should be stopped in their tracks in any way, but I do think the rest of the counties need to be supported and they need to be able to reach those standards whatever way is possible, whether it's pooling sponsorship, resources, information, knowledge, whether it's sending a few players down, I don't know, but you know, there's they just need a bit of help now to try and get up to that standard. But that is the standard, and every day seeing them and seeing what the likes of Dean Rock and Conor Callaghan, Kieran Kilkenny, Brian Fenton, Stephen Cluxton, like they are the, like if you go to any club in Dublin, the kids are just in awe of these players because they are absolutely fantastic. I don't know if the kids around Dublin will maybe appreciate what Cavan and Tipperary did. Like they're still going out to training on Sunday morning wanting to be Conor Callaghan, wanting to be Kieran Kilkenny or whoever.
But that's what I said in Tipperary last night, that this team might inspire a generation of kids to want to play football, and that's what you have to do, and fair play to them for doing that as well. I have a Tipperary South medal myself playing football.
Seriously?
Under 16, Rose Green, won the South Tipperary Championship.
How?
Everything he's won, and he's so proud of that. Like, you wouldn't mention one of your horse racing, you know, great wins. You always
couldn't,
play him
I
down.
Couldn't get a kick in Kildare. I couldn't play hurling, so it was easy to get a game in football in Tipperary. I was working in Ballydoyle, played football for Rose Green as a ringer. My name isn't on the team sheet, but I have the medal.
At what position?
Right half back, ended up midfield. Ended up centre forward, I think, in the end.
He was a sweeper before he even knew it. Look at him roaming just around the place. Can I ask a question? In a championship like no other, knockout guys, how are we feeling about it? Like, I just thought that added to the emotion.
It's class. Bring it back.
Bring it back. Keep your Super 8s and all this stuff. Marie, I don't know, you're there, they're going to train for ages. One game is enough? Yes. It just puts
it's great
it
for the fans. Like, absolutely. Like, it's been brilliant this year. I can't believe for a while there we thought it wasn't going to happen. Thank God that
it
happened.
That was you,
which was
pessimistic, hadn't you? The rest was thought of integrations.
But
upbeat Ruby.
I'd feel for the players, and Colm Cooper said it last night on the Sunday game, that it's very hard to have players going out training and for 8 months a year, they're not training like professional rugby players, but they're not far off it. And if you were told, right, Dunica, you're going to have to train for 8 months a year, and you'll probably get one match, maybe two, would you want to do it? It's very hard to expect them to do that level and not have games, because players want to play games, and that's what comes out of every single GPA survey that they do. They want more games, and to take that away from them would be, you know, considering they've got used to that, it would be hard.
I love that one. They want more games, yet there's the congestion. They can't fit all the games in, yet they all want more games, yet I don't know, this GAA, I'm telling you one thing, you want to be some genius to figure it out.
Every player's always going to say that. No one ever, like even at underage sports, no one ever wants to do the training. Everyone wants to play matches. As soon as you go up to any under 12s, when are we playing a game? That's all they want to do, leave them play matches.
even in the coaching sessions, are we playing a game? They don't want to pass the ball, kick the ball, no, we'll just play a game. But look, that's life.
Well, we're going to be chatting to Paddy Christie and Shawnee Johnston very, very shortly, and I'm sure they'll have more insightful views than I will on knockout championship and what's best for Dublin football, because they're the ones that have been involved in it. They've been there, done that, seen it, and they know more, an awful lot more than we do. So let's take a break and come back with them.
Protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, there are a lot of people texting in agreeing with Ruby about Dublin, and also a lot of people have Kildare as their highlight from the weekend too.
That's more people agree with me. Yeah. Even more people agree with me. Mind you, Marie, when you do back up the county with the biggest population in the country, of course people are going to be backing you up.
No flies on you. We've had another listener, Paul O'Neill, has texted in, and Stephanie Meadow is his highlight of the weekend. She finished with a 1-under-69 to secure a brilliant third place finish at the Pelican Women's Championship on Sunday evening. So absolutely fair play to her, and I'm sure she is a lot of people's highlights. Now, it is time to talk to one of the people who was involved in the weekend's super action. Paddy Christie is a member of the Tipperary Football Backroom Team, and he joins us now. Paddy, congratulations. I'd say it was an interesting 24 hours.
Thanks very much, Marie. Yeah, you know, very special day yesterday. I'm a half sort of tip man because my mother is from Tipperary, so I'm not a thoroughbred, but it was very special. And I suppose I spent a lot of summers down in Tipperary as a young lad, so I feel like I'm connected with them. So I felt a part of things yesterday, but not as much as the other lads, but still it was very special, you know.
The Tipperary football community is quite a special one, as you mentioned, and even when we heard David Parr speaking afterwards, you know, there was a cohort of people that he thanked, and you know, a lot of them were familiar names, people who have been there for so long with Tipperary football, driving it forward. It must just add to it when, you know, it is such a small community and a tight-knit one.
Yeah, well, I suppose 85 years says it all. I mean, probably a lot of those people, they thought that they would never come. Yesterday would never come, and it's lovely for them. The people who are at the coalface, and particularly for the three lads there, I suppose, who are synonymous with Tipperary, David himself, and then Tommy Toomey is the lad who does the video analysis and is heavily involved, and Charlie McKeever, who's a Donegal man originally for his sins, but has been sort of an adopted Tip man. It's great for those lads. Like, they're the three wise men, I call them, with Tipperary football, and I suppose they've soldiered for a long time with the coalface, and they wonder would that day ever come. So delighted for them, you know.
Paddy, you've been quite busy, obviously, Offaly, Leitrim, Clare, Limerick, a lot of games, but you had the lads in terrific form yesterday. They were so fresh and just went at it from the kickoff.
Yeah, well, it's difficult, Donegal, because as you know, you're trying to balance quite a bit of preparation with trying to keep people fresh, and you want fellas to be leaping out of their skins, and yet you still want to keep your foot on the pedal. So I thought we got the balance right during the week. We'd done quite a bit of work the week before, and then we lessened off, and you could just sort of sense in training on Wednesday and Friday last week that lads were really up for it, and you just hope that they will go out and perform. Because the problem with it is, as all you know, when people want something so bad, and when they're really, really ready for action, they can sometimes just go out and flop, more from just wanting it too much, and that's what you're afraid of. And in fairness, they didn't go out and do that. They went straight out and got stuck in, and they did themselves justice, I think.
And when you throw in the emotion as well of Bloody Sunday and the jersey, was that difficult to manage all of that on top of it being a Munster final against Cork and a chance at silverware?
Yeah, well, Marie, I suppose the Bloody Sunday thing was an extra dimension. I won't say we dismissed it, far from it, with the historic significance and how it meant so much to so many people in the country, and particularly in Tipperary. But I suppose what we did was we decided we would wear that jersey, and that was sort of it. It was mentioned a couple of times in training, and then we moved on. We wore the jersey, and then said we'd go out and play and try and perform, and that would be the best way to respect the weekend that was in it, and to go out and perform and play well. And obviously, if we could win, all the better. Sometimes you can just get bogged down with things and talk about things too much, and we wanted to be a team of performers rather than people who were talking all the time. So I suppose that was the way we looked at things. We said we'd wear the jersey. The jersey was quite a jump. I mean, they're blue and gold for a long time, Tipperary, and to go into green and white jerseys, it might mean an awful lot now, but I suppose the week before the game, you were thinking, I wonder could this adversely affect people, but it didn't in any way at all. We wore them in training during the week, and it was just out of the way then. It was just one of those things that didn't really matter after that.
Are you going to stick with them? The jerseys, I mean?
That's for David to answer. I love not being the manager, because you never have to. Really. It's like the principal in the school always has to deal with all this, the flack, really. And, you know, the deputy principal gets away with it. So I suppose, to answer your question, I don't know. I think that the blue and gold is synonymous with Tipperary, and I don't see that changing, but I suppose the year that's in it, it may be considered to keep that jersey for the semi-final. I really don't know. I suppose it'll be a county board issue, and it'll be David Power, and it'll be the players, and some sort of common opinion then will form. But for us, it's moving on to the next step now, semi-final in Croke Park, and whatever jersey it is, it's fantastic to be there, you know.
So tell us, when did you make the decision to start Colin O'Riordan?
Colin O'Riordan had been training for a while and he'd been doing very well, and obviously Namore and the rest of the lads who came from Australia, there were question marks over availability, whether they were going to be released. And I suppose he had been working as part of the backroom team on match days, and he was very frustrated, I'm sure, as you'd all understand. Like, he's training, playing very well and training, moving well, and then next thing, you know, he can't be involved. So I suppose it was, once we were given the go-ahead to consider him, I'm sure that, I won't say it made our mind up, because he still had to play well in training, but he'd been going quite well as it was, and I suppose it was an obvious thing to want to have the best players available to you out on the pitch. And I suppose this is a guy who, you know, bleeds blue and gold blood, and his heart, even if you saw the speech there on Sunday afterwards, like, so emotional, he's so
invested in Tip football, yeah.
Yeah, invested in Tipperary and Tipperary football, that it was, for me, it was an obvious one. It's a difficult thing to do, because I suppose we've lads there who were training away and they've been playing reasonably well, and, you know, are you risking deflating other people? But we try to create a sort of a very good bond in the group, and the lads were all aiming for the one thing, and if that means making difficult decisions sometimes and where lads miss out, that's just what has to happen for the good of Tipperary football. That was the aim. It wasn't about one person, it was about us crossing the finishing line, and that's what needed to be done, I think.
You are Munster champions, but obviously Mayo lie in wait. What's your regime now? How do you harness the energy and excitement from yesterday into the next game?
I suppose, Dunica, you want to enjoy yesterday, and I'd say some of the lads are enjoying today as well. And then at some stage, you have to put it behind you. There has to be a balancing act. I think if you were to go home yesterday and say, okay, no one's to have any fun, no one's to even talk about it, we have to move on to Mayo, that would be ridiculous, because, you know, they don't come around too often. It's been 85 years, so who, you know, that would be silly. But on the other hand, this can't drag on forever, and we have got another big game, a very significant game coming up. So I suppose we'll gather again during the week, and we'll enjoy it a few days, but after that then we need to get back down to serious business. And I suppose for Tipperary to really make the progress that I want and that all the management want and all the players want, there has to be a performance in Croke Park. It can't be okay, Munster champions, but like, we had a disaster, and you know, against Mayo, and it doesn't really matter because we won the Munster championship. That will leave a sour taste. We need to go out and perform again. And if that performance is good enough to bring us over to finish it on against Mayo, all the better. But I suppose I wouldn't like the idea of just resting on our laurels now. Like, I'd like to see us go on and maybe build on this. That's obviously given us a huge confidence boost, and there's no reason why we can't move on another level, I think.
And a lot of players have been there before, 11 still available from 2016, so it's not like there isn't experience of those big days, Paddy.
Yeah, there is, and Marie, like, there's a lot of lads who won minors and 21s and that sort of thing, Munsters. Obviously there's an All-Ireland winning minor team from 2011, so there has been success at underage level, and they were in an All-Ireland final in 2006, All-Ireland semi-final in 2016, so you do have experience there, and the people who are involved in the back room have had experience as well, so of the big days, so I wouldn't be overly worried about that. And I think it's an exciting time. It's certainly much better than being knocked out in the first round or the earlier rounds. Like, for us, this is a learning curve, and it will make it easier, I think, in Croke Park. Although, in my heart of hearts, I think we'd all love to have 82,000 people there. It's not going to happen. And I suppose going into Croke Park, for any of the younger lads or inexperienced players, it won't be the same daunting prospect. It'll be a lovely place to play, but it won't put the same pressures on. So you'd hope that it might just let lads express themselves a little bit easier.
Shani Johnston joins us on the line. Shani, congratulations to you as well. And afterwards, hearing Faulkner saying that he took something from that tip result when they were going into to their match. Did it give all the Cavan people a little bit of confidence?
Yeah, I suppose, first of all, just to pass on my congratulations to Paddy, we thought our famine here of 23 years was extremely long, but for 85 years, it's phenomenal, so very well done. But I think this thing had been going around all week about the four semi-finalists from 1920, and people were kind of laughing and making a joke of it early on in the week, and next thing, Mayo had obviously won, and then Dublin won, which everyone expected, and then Tip won, which was unbelievable. And then everyone started going to Cavan, jeepers, maybe this can happen. And, you know, it was just incredible on Sunday, and to see the scenes. I know Paddy talked what it was like for Tipperary. It was the same down here, just cars everywhere. You couldn't move the town, everyone in their cars. It was just an incredible night around Breffni Park. And, the players were there in Breffni Park, and people were kind of driving by, staying in their cars with the restrictions and so on. But it was just brilliant, absolutely amazing night.
Sean, it looked like the Cavan players believed in it too, because they fought for every ball from start to finish.
Yeah, incredible intensity right from the very start. They got a good start, which they needed to do. I know Ray mentioned during the week that they met up on Tuesday night, and they just said they're going to attack every ball and fight for every ball, because they knew, I suppose, they'd given Monaghan a good lead, and Antrim were ahead of them at half-time, and then Down obviously had a comprehensive lead as well, and they probably knew with the quality Donegal had that you couldn't do that. So I think they really attacked those first 15 minutes. They had a game plan, they got matchups right, and they moved Jason McLaughlin up the wing half forward. You know, he's played cornerback all his life for Cavan, all his Cavan career, and moved him up the wing forward to track Ryan McHugh. He did an unbelievable job, he was just everywhere. And then they got their other matchups right on Murphy and McBrearty and so on, and Jamie Brennan, who were kept reasonably quiet. And then they always had that long ball tactic, and I suppose it's one thing that Cavan have this year compared to what they had last year in the final. They have monsters, you know, Thomas Galligan's a monster, Garrod, monster of a man, James Smith, Liam Buchanan on the bench, so they're blessed with that height, and they're going to cause the Donegal full back line problems. And Sean Patton has been unbelievable, but at times he was made feel a bit uncomfortable, I think, with a lot of those long direct balls in on top of him, and it really paid off, thank God.
I think a special mention goes to Raymond Galligan as well, just for his shot stopping, because when he was made into a goalkeeper for those kickouts, there was questions about his shot stopping, but yesterday he was just unbelievable.
He was unbelievable, and to be honest, he has been unbelievable throughout the whole championship. He pulled off a couple of brilliant saves against Monaghan. Cavan could have potentially gone out against Antrim. Raymond made a really good save with about 15 minutes to go that would have put Antrim 3 or 4 up, and then he made a great save against Down from Caelan Mooney when it was nearly game over if it had gone in. And then yesterday again, he made one from Owen Bon Gallagher and from, I think it was Jamie Brennan as well, that he got down into in the second half. So, look, I know the work he has put into it. He was an outfield player, a very good outfield player, still plays outfield for his club, so the skill set is there. He was brilliant. He's a brilliant free taker, so the kick out is there. And as you said, Marie, he has worked so hard in terms of the shot stopping, and it's really paid off for him this year.
We heard Paddy mentioning there an All-Ireland semi-final in Croke Park. How do you feel about your All-Ireland semi-final in Croke Park? Would you like to see it moved?
I would. Look, there's this narrative as well, I suppose, that every player, well, you want to go and test yourself against the best, and there's no doubt that Cavan are going to play the best team in the country. Do you want to play the best team in the country in their home ground? I don't think that they do. In terms of this Cavan team, a lot of players have been around a while, and they've played in Croke Park, they've played in National League finals, so to have that bit of experience of playing there, so it's not a novelty of just going to Croke Park and get playing in Croke Park. I think... You know, a lot of people were speaking about it yesterday on different channels. And can Cavan win this game? Everyone's going to say no, but everyone said they couldn't win yesterday as well. Have they a better chance if it's outside of Croke Park? Without a doubt. You know, the facts and stats are there. I think Dublin are plus 10 in Croke Park, distance of winning, and outside of Croke Park it goes to plus 5. So, look, I think it's something Cavan need to look at. I felt it was something Meath needed to look at as well, Marie, because the Ulster final obviously got moved to Armagh this year. Connacht and Munster gets rotated year after year, so... You know, why would Cavan want to go to Croke Park when potentially they could play Dublin in a smaller venue? It's not as if it's going to be in huge crowds there with the way things are. So, make it as favourable as possible. At the end of the day, you're going to an All-Ireland semi-final to try and win it, and you need to come up with, I suppose, things that are going to make it, that bit easier for you.
Rigby's going to give out to me now, Paddy, if I don't ask about Dublin, because he feels they don't get enough credit, that we're all talking about Cavan and Tipperary and not lauding Dublin's 10 Leinster titles. But look, they are a fantastic team, and I think for a long time we have been appreciating them, and it's just hard this weekend when there's an awful lot of other stories capturing the imagination, but they were superb on Saturday night in Croke Park.
They were. Like, Cavan and Tipperary this weekend, or just the weekend gone, are fairy tales, I suppose. And Dublin, it's just a machine, and that it continues on happening all the time. And that's where it's probably unfair, in that they play so well and they're so consistent, and they don't get the credit. But, like, I have a Dublin hat on as well, and I'm a Tipperary coach, and, you know, have a soft spot for both. And I'd have to think that, you know, deep down, Tipperary deserve their day in the sun, as do Cavan. And, you know, Dublin won't be bothered in the slightest. I don't think Desi Farrell would care less about people talking less about Dublin at the moment. I mean, they're a fantastic team. They'll probably go down in history as the greatest team the Gaelic football has ever seen, anyway. And, you know, they're well-deserved over the years, to put a lot of success and a lot of underage work done. So, look, nobody... I don't think anyone could deny that, but I suppose on the other hand, with Tipperary and Cavan and the weekend just gone, for them, I mean, particularly with Tipperary, I know Shawnee was, what was it, 25 years, but with Tipperary it's 85 years. I mean, those days are very, very special. So you'd like to see the underdogs get the chance, and Dublin will certainly, you know, be on people's radar in the next couple of weeks, and they've been on the radar for the last number of years. So I suppose, like, it's just nice for the smaller, the lesser lights to get a shot, you know.
It is indeed. Well done, Paddy. Thanks a million, Shawnee. We're going to take a break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Okay, Andy Farrell has expressed his pride in the Irish players after they lost 18-7 in Twickenham on Saturday. We're joined by Ulster, Ireland and Lions straight-talking back row Stephen Ferris. Fez, pride in performance is always a given for Ireland, but were we tactically short?
Oh, geez, Donaghy, I thought you were going to say 18-70 there. I thought it was. I was hoping it was going to be 70 points at the weekend. Unfortunately not. Really disappointing, wasn't it? I was in RT1 with Jimmy Heaslip, Dara and Eddie O'Sullivan, and, you know, Eddie O'Sullivan didn't pull any punches. He was very disappointed with the defeat, and, you know, I went home and reflected on it and watched it over again, and, you know, personally, you know, the Irish lads, with four or five key players that are out injured at the minute, the squad is certainly going to get strengthened up a little bit more, and Andy Farrell's been giving guys opportunity. And you look at the England team, it was pretty much fully loaded, apart from maybe Manu Tuilagi. But it still feels that, you know, we're lacking in power. But I don't think there was a lack of effort at the weekend, which was a huge positive, Donaghy.
Eddie said that there was no discernible game plan. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think there, of course, there was a game plan. I just don't think the guys executed it that well. Talking to Bernard Jackman actually after the game as well. And, you know, you sometimes have to go backwards two or three phases to get an edge. And I totally agree with Bernard on that point when we were chatting. But it's just unfortunate that Ireland were just getting nailed back every single time. Their kicking wasn't as accurate as it maybe could have been. And, it just felt that we were a little bit too predictable. I'm not sure, Marie, if the game plan was to take England on. I highly doubt that, but I just think that, you know, with the set piece not functioning to the way that you would expect an Irish set piece to function, then you're limited for options, and then you start chasing the game, especially when you find yourself 18 points down. So, yeah, just disappointing, isn't it?
But, Stephen, there were so many new players. Two new players in the front row, new 9 and 10, different centre partnership, new fullback. Like, it was only a couple of mistakes that let England score. I think everyone has been overly downbeat. You've got to try new players at some stage, and they have to get game time.
Yeah, and it's exposure at that level too, Ruby. I think, you know, you look at the Johnny May try and overthrow at the line out 5 yards out, they go the length of the pitch and score.
Hugo Keenan jumps too early for the first try, and the other two scores are penalties.
Yeah, and that's the fine margins, isn't it? And you know yourself and Elite Sport right at the top, it's fine margins that decide results at the end of the day. But I think it was great for some of the young guys. It is worrying, Ruby, that, you know, with the back row that we had out, you know, CJ Stander was anonymous for the whole game. You know, Keelan Doris was banging on the door, trying as hard as he could, and he was getting knocked back every single time he touched it. And, you know, Peter O'Mahony was trying his socks off, and we just couldn't get any momentum, any gain line whatsoever. And that's the worrying thing going forward, because, you know, when we come up against South Africa, New Zealand, Australia at the minute have got the bit between their teeth, and obviously the Argentina are getting stronger too. So that's the worrying thing going forward. But you're totally right. Players getting game time and exposure at that level is only a good thing.
But the players have to settle into those positions. And if you look at the hooker, how many hookers have they used in the last 2 years, Donica? 5, 6, and there's still massive issues then with the line out. So it's great using new players and trying new faces, but they have to be able to do the job.
And I think you've hit a key point. And I think we went to a Rugby World Cup with Rory Best as hooker. And if I'm being honest, no one went for him. I didn't think there was anyone that was putting him under so much pressure. We had to pick Rory Best. And I'm worried at the moment that when you look at certain key positions, like even 9 and 10, we have to pick Conor Murray and Jonathan Sexton, because the standard for me, I think Ross Byrne's an incredible player, but he played so deep, and as a forward trying to get around the corner to that type of play, of course you're running backfield, you know, you're running round to try to make ground, and I think in his absence, I think Johnny's stock went up. For me though, Stephen, I just think game management, and I'm questioning it at the moment, because we know international games, they're tight margins, and we had a penalty there on kind of 19 minutes Vinopola blocking one of our players, 5 points to nil down, and we put it into the corner, which leads to the turnover try with Johnny May with the overthrow, the missed tackle, then you're 12 nil down. I just, maybe I'm old school, but scoreboard pressure, 3-6-9, I'm convinced if we were respectful to the scoreboard, we could have been 18-12 going into the last 10 minutes, and then you're playing a different game.
Yeah, but Donegal, why did we do it the previous week? You know, why did, you know, Peter O'Mahony and Johnny go for posts and kick all the penalties against Wales, who, you know, I think if they had a kick to the corner a lot more, they probably would have scored a few more tries. So, again, I think that's a tactic getting into this match, that when they got an opportunity, they were kicking to the corner. It had been talked about in meetings previous to the first whistle of the game. And, you know, they just didn't get any change out of it. There was massive heat from Itoje and Launchbury in the line-out. But again, the timing seemed off. There was miscommunication. And it just seemed a little bit all over the place. So, yeah, Donegal, I reckon it definitely was talked about during the week that they would kick to the corner and they would try and apply pressure that way and see how they front it up. And unfortunately, they come out second best.
Stephen, you were a big ball carrier in your day, but watching it back this morning, it looked to me like it took almost 50 minutes for the lads to realise that they had to get so low when they were going forward with it. If they went in anyway upright, they were being driven 5 yards backwards.
Yeah, like I was covering a game, Ulster versus Scarlets last night in the Pro 14, and you just watch somebody like Marcel Coutier, who carries the ball for Ulster, and he almost rides the tackle, and then he pumps the legs and goes again. And all good carriers are able to get a bit of a bump on the first man, and then sort of get that momentum to get in behind. James Ryan, a couple of times, he sort of bounced off the first man, or the first defender, and then was able to get 4 or 5 yards in behind the defence. But you need that time and time again, and England are good at that. When they have the ball, they just didn't have too much of it. They kicked it away. I don't really know why, but yeah, it definitely is a problem, Ruby, for Ireland going forward, because maybe if you bring Jack Conan in there, you have Tadhg Furlong in there, Keelan Doris is, you know, can get a bit freer in the wider channels, then maybe that takes a bit of pressure off. But I certainly agree, the carrying ability of the Irish forwards in particular at the minute needs to improve, and they need to find holes. But that's an English defence that didn't have too many holes at the weekend.
Donica, how do you assess the line out?
I thought the line-out was, it was poor, especially when you look at the English back row. I don't think, and Stephen, you might disagree, but I don't think Tom Curry, Sam Underhill, Billy Villanpola, they're not jumping options. So they pretty much had two pods. It was unfortunate for Ronan Keller that we went to the tail an awful lot early in the line-out. I thought we could have, for a young hooker, we could have looked after him a little bit better, let him hit winners, get him into the game. Our first line-out was a four-man. Our next two lineouts were at the tail, which it's a big, big throw. And look, I know he's an international player and he nails it. And I promise, the most of the times he nails it, but the pressure situation got to him a little bit. The big thing for me, I suppose, is James Ryan is now calling the lineouts. This is new to him. In the setup before, Ian Henderson used to call the lineouts. And before that, it was kind of Paul O'Connell. James Ryan is learning how Devin Toner calls them at Leinster. So he's learning at international level. And look, we heard Andy Farrell saying that he was curious. And with this, the lineout callers I've worked with, and Stephen, maybe you could elaborate on it, but they were obsessed with lineouts, absolutely obsessed with movement, how you sit people down. And I just question that at the moment when it comes to our lineouts, which I think is an easy fix. We can fix our lineout and our breakdown, but I'm wondering, it does need someone to run it. Fez, you still there?
Sorry, Donners, you sort of look at me to jump on top of that, are you?
Yes.
Sorry, you went quiet. Sometimes I think the lineup can be complicated too much, and sometimes the simple options, as you say, are easier for everyone involved. But it's all well and good doing it in training, the opposition in training, knowing exactly where you're throwing it and everything else. But when you come under heat and you come under Mara Toti standing in the middle of the lineout, shouting, screaming, doing everything that he can to put you off, it's a completely different ball game. And as you say, sometimes just a couple of settlers, even two or three throws to the front, just to calm everybody down. And those two or three throws to the front can just be down and gives, just to hold the tail of the line out as well. So, yeah, it is a quick fix. It's a quick fix in training. It's a quick fix in captain's run and everything else. But they'll certainly need to get it right this weekend against Georgia.
Because that's going to be a physical one, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. I know Neil Doak, former Ulster backs coach, he's in charge there. David Humphreys, obviously he's in there. Also, he's been ringing me up the last couple of weeks looking to get a game of golf, so I'm not sure how much coaching he's doing. He's in charge of things over there. But yeah, like the Georgians, they'll front up. That's one thing that they'll do. They'll front up. The physicality will be there. And it's just about Ireland nailing their set piece, because they're creating opportunities. It's driving me up the walls, because they are creating opportunities. And if they can just get that nailed, it would certainly help everybody out, and it would deflect a bit of the criticism as well that's been thrown their way after that English defeat on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, as always, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Quick break and we're back chatting hurling.
With Green Farm, fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. It feels like a long time ago, but there was a great day of hurling action on Saturday, and now we know our final four. Kilkenny and Waterford are set for their All-Ireland semi-final on Saturday evening, with Limerick and Galway on Sunday afternoon. The dates were confirmed earlier today. Now to talk through the action, Shane McGrath joins us. Shane, a disappointing day for yourself and myself, but look, I think if you were from Galway and Waterford, it was absolutely fantastic. We asked on Friday whether Galway have the killer instinct, and it seems like they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, Marie, like, it's a rip-roaring affair between Tip and Galway, not between them. 17, there was a pint in it, 16, a pint in it, 15, a pint in it, and even back to 2010, there was a pint in it. And like, you know, you've just doubled the scores and there's two pints in it. But like, it was so close. Like, I mean, even everything, all the stats, like, Tip took 38 shots, Galway took 39 shots. They both had 26 scores in the game. So, you know, there was, as I alluded to, like, already, I said that the Tip boys, they did die with their boots on. And the Galway lads will look at it and they will say, yeah, we're in the semi-final. And you know, they'll look at a lot of their key players and they'll probably feel they can get even more out of their key players. So they'll take massive confidence going into the semi-final now. And they have a really, really strong panel. And like, kudos to the Galway management. David Burke was getting on a lot of ball, playing that sweeper role. And Johnny Cohen was scoring a point and getting on ball. But they decided they were going to go at this in the second half with the wind. Bring on Adrian Toohey, bring on Jason Flynn. And straight away, like, when those two guys come on, the other 13 guys in the field just look at them and they just see energy. And that's what you got off them. And like, the two of those guys were, you know, they played a big part in Galway's victory as well.
Sure, you're going to blame Cathal Barrett's two yellow cards, are you?
I'm not going to blame the second yellow card, Ruby, but I think the first yellow was harsh enough. All right, but no, not going to go down that road. I don't think you can really. I don't think it was the winning. I don't think it was the losing of the game. I do feel it was a factor, Ruby, and I'll tell you why. Like, after Cathal went off, Galway scored 1-6. Now, maybe they would have scored 1-6 anyway, but if you look back at the goal they got, where Adrian Toohey got the goal from, that would have been Cathal's area of the field. And you know, with the extra man back there, they mightn't have been able to work the ball as well as they did. Jason Flynn over to Toohey to Aidan Hart, and he buries it. That was the goal. And even in the 68th minute, I think it was, Kenning gets the ball. He's surrounded by four or five tip guys. You're just sucked into Joe Kenning, no more so, and you'd be sucked into Messi or something on the field. Players just are drawn to him because they know there's danger. But he goes through and he realises the space is there, and there'll probably be a Galway guy there, or they'll have numbers, and he just throws it out into the space. And again, that's the space where Cathal would have been. So maybe they wouldn't have got that, and Jason Flynn picks it up, puts it over the bar. So look, I don't think any Tipperary person are begrudging Galway the victory. I think Galway were fully worth it. And as I said, they will look at a lot of their, you know, they'll look at getting more out of Dahi Burke from the start, more out of Garrod McInerney, maybe getting Joe more scores from Joe from play. But I mean, when they work that ball in, they looked really, really good. And look, it will be a massive test for me against Limerick, though. I will say that, because third week in a row, and for me, I honestly can't see Limerick beating this year. Like,
okay, well, we'll have to talk about that another day, because we are nearly out of time. But just a quick word on the Waterford Clare game as well. You mentioned teams getting better, and it seems that with every week Waterford are getting better as well, and you have to give great credit to Liam Cathal. He has those players, they're fluid, they're cohesive, and there's just a great attitude and energy about them.
Yeah, look, you could sum it up quickly, Marie, in this way, right? I think what Waterford are now this year under Liam Cathal is they're more of a team than they have been in a long time. And they're working so hard for each other. And if you're not willing to put in a really, really good shift of work rate, Liam Cathal is not going to consider you. You think about the guys he didn't include and the guys that he has to work with. Even the guys that are injured, Dara Fives, you know, hasn't been seen this year and he's injured. And he's a massive player. But Conor Dleese came on, scored two great points the other day. But even just to go back again, last year they were scoring on average 20 points in their games. Like, in one of their games, they only scored 10 points. Whereas this year they're scoring on average 29 points in their games. And that's not because, like, you know, lads are getting more accurate or anything like that. It's because they're working more as a team now, and they're getting the ball into that zone where they can get the scores. And the man in the best position is getting the ball for Waterford, and the man in the best position is taking on the shot now. Whereas maybe before it wasn't. But under Liam Cathal, that's what it's all about. It's all about team. They had 12 different scores the other day. They got 5 points from play from their subs bench. And I'm going to say it now. I think they're going to cause, maybe not to the Waterford guys, but I think to a lot of hurling people, I think they're going to cause an upset at the weekend. And I think they're going to beat Kilkenny.
Oh, that's a brave shout. But look, they got 3 goals. Obviously, Clare did as well. But Desi Hutchinson got 2 and made the other one. He's having a huge impact as well.
He's unbelievable, Ruby. And he's obviously, it's well known, he's a fantastic soccer player. And I think the quality of the pitch the other day, you can almost see that footwork he has from playing soccer. He's just that 5-yard dash and the ability just to give a guy a little nudge. Even for his second goal, you won't really notice it if you went back and watched it. He gives Rory Hayes just gives him a little nudge, gets the ball, and he's quick hands in. And like, he was serious. He was really good the other day. Scored 2-2, set up Fagan's goal. But even his vision just to pick out, I think it was Neil Montgomery in the second half as well. He's a really, really good player. And look, Liam Cathal again. His teams he's over get goals. Like under 21, he was over Tip in the 2018 final. They got 3 goals. And in last year, under 20 final, Tip got 5 goals. So Liam Cathal will be looking to get 2 or 3 green flags at the weekend to try and get over Kilkenny as well.
Okay, Shane McGrath, thanks so much for joining us. We'll no doubt be talking about those games later on in the week. That is all we have time for. We were supposed to do some soccer tonight. We didn't get to it. We will get to it tomorrow. And a quick word to Piemont as well, who won at the Women's National League. That is all from us tonight. We'll be back tomorrow.